care about a lot of social issues, but if I had to pick the one that I think is most important, I would choose education. And that's because I think when you peel back the layers of a lot of other issues, it often comes down to a lack of understanding the problem, which could be solved by learning about it and critical thinking skills. If everyone were willing and able to get educated about XYZ topic, we would be able to make the best policies and choices about it. When society has well-rounded, strong knowledge about things, it's easier for people to get good jobs and advocate for good wages, and then increase their quality of life, and then support the economy by being good consumers, and therefore create more jobs, etc., etc. Schools in America have been struggling for a while now, but it seems like just how bad things are is being brought to light. There was a significant drop in test scores since the pandemic, but even before then, since 2012, reading has dropped 7 points and math has dropped 14. This study has been monitoring scores since the 70s, and we are now only 1 single point in reading above the very first reading scores that were ever collected. And I looked at trends for older students by checking SAT scores, and compared to the 70s, on average, now both reading and math are lower. So, what's been happening? Why isn't school working? And how did we end up here? I think it would be good to start in the early learning and development stages, and as always, put some blame on technology. I feel like 90% of my videos end up in me partly blaming the internet somehow, so may as well get that out of the way now. Even before kids enter the school system, many are already at a disadvantage because of their screen time. This is no surprise to anyone, but there has been study after study showing young children who have high screen time is correlated with having poor communication, motor skills, socio-emotional health, among other things. And like I said, it seems like this research is generally known to the public. So why are we giving kids screens when we know it's going to come back to bite them? And later, their teachers who will soon have to deal with them. One quick note about millennial parents who get a lot of flack for raising iPad kids. Best believe if iPads existed when boomers were young parents, they would have done the same thing. It's just that millennials were the first generation who had the opportunity to raise an iPad kid. Boomers did the same thing, their own version, which was go outside and play, but handing your kid an iPad and telling your kid to go outside and play both are to accomplish the same purpose. You don't have to deal with them for a couple of hours. On average now, children 5 and under spend 25% of their waking hours with a screen, and most of the research that gets to these numbers is reported by the parents, so I would not be surprised if parents are either intentionally or unintentionally underreporting the screen time. These few years before a kid enters school are so crucial for development, and I'm not saying parents have to teach math to their 2-year-old, but it's so important for them to have this time with their toddlers before they enter preschool and kindergarten to start instilling communication skills and how to pay attention and play nicely with others and get them started on the alphabet and reading and counting. Unfortunately, America's paid family leave is truly an embarrassment. Only 25% of workers even have access to it. So we're all rushing back to work after having a kid and leaving them at daycare. And I'm sorry, there is just no way. Those places are so understaffed. They're just trying to have the kids diapers changed and eat and not get injured. And I get it. There is so much pressure to do things right in these early years. I'm sure it's very overwhelming. If only other aspects of new parents' lives could be made less stressful, like job security and time off and income levels that aren't always on the edge of disaster, maybe they would be able to spend more time and dedicate time to their children when they really need it. The problem is, if kids start off behind, they are likely to stay that way. Cognitive skills at kindergarten entry are solid predictors of later academic performance and even success into adulthood. Having a strong early education and just strong education in general is one of the strongest predictors of if someone will experience poverty. And this fact is not new. Back in 1965, one of the earlier major pieces of federal legislation in education was by LBJ, the Early and Secondary Education Act, which brought large amounts of federal dollars to fund schools for the first time. And then in 2001, No Child Left Behind. I talked to one of my friends who was a teacher and mentioned NCLB, and she said every teacher she has ever worked with hates it. Essentially, what it did was base the funding schools receive on standardized test scores in order to increase accountability. If their scores don't make adequate yearly progress, the school is penalized. And even if the students do make a great increase in their progress from year to year, if they don't reach that proficient level yet, they're still punished. There's a lot of criticisms of NCLB, but one is how much focus it put on testing. The goal of teachers, in order to not put their school and their job at risk, had to be to get kids to pass these tests, not necessarily to understand the material. And those two things are sometimes connected, but not always. There has been many a time in my life where I got an A on a test, not because I deeply understood or even kind of understood what I was supposed to learn, but because I had memorized it. And also, states get to design their own test standards. Some of them admitted that they lowered standards so that more kids would pass and then their funding would remain secure. And another problem is that the standardized tests only have states required to test English and math, and sometimes science. NCLB was replaced in 2015 by the Every Student Succeeds Act, which is not drastically different, just shifts more control to the state level, and along with test scores, it also bases success off graduation rates, which might explain why teachers feel pressure to push students through to the next grade, to the next grade, to graduate, even when they know they shouldn't. And it's not to say that I think we need to get rid of standardized testing. I think that's important. But I think that dangling a carrot based on scores was a recipe for the schools that were struggling the most to be punished and therefore perform even worse. I want to take some time to specifically talk about reading, which has been a top priority on standardized tests, and I don't disagree with that. If you can't read well, you won't be able to comprehend a math word problem, or learn history, or science. So much of education of all subjects is done through the written word. So if you don't have a good grasp on that, it will lead to bigger problems. There has been a lot of panic lately coming to the mainstream and social media, realizing how much kids are struggling to learn to read. And I don't think this is necessarily a new Gen Alpha thing. I just think it's picking up in popularity and more people are understanding and becoming aware of how bad the reading problem is. Something that kept coming up when I was looking into this was the Sold a Story podcast, which dives into the different reading curriculums that have been used in the US. It looks at two different approaches to teach reading: phonics and whole language, which is sometimes called balanced literacy. Basically, phonics is sounding out the letters of the word, and whole language is using other tactics like checking the picture in the book and looking at the words before it, like, does it make sense in the sentence? Try to guess the next word that would make sense, like figuring it out through context. And it's not to say that whole language strategies are useless, but they should not be the first things on the list when a beginning reader gets to a word they don't know. Sounding it out should not be a last resort, but more like a first priority. Whole language is like trying to figure out a word you don't know by looking at all the stuff around it. But what if you're 4 years old and you're learning to read and the book starts with the special dog? You can probably get the word the because it's really common and it's little. But how are you ever going to get the word special through context? If there's a picture of a dog, how is it clear that that dog is special? And the first letter of the word is not enough either. There's a ton of different adjectives that start with S. You need phonics to learn how to read that word. Whole language has since been rebranded a bit to balanced literacy, but it seems like the balance in this approach is heavily tipped towards the original whole language strategies with a little bit of phonics sprinkled in there. And as recently as 2020, over half of teachers said that balanced literacy was their main philosophy for teaching reading. Luckily, in the past year or two, lawmakers in education are starting to accept the data behind how good readers learn to read and change curriculums to reflect the importance of phonics and the pitfalls of whole language. So we'll see if that improves things, but plenty of damage has already been done. In some ways, I kind of sympathize with teachers getting on board with whole language because it was something new and different, and that made it seem fun. And teachers want learning to be fun so that kids will want to do it. But not every part of school is going to be fun for every kid. We all had our least favorite subject, and for me, that was always math. Even through to college, I went out of my way to choose certain paths that would allow me to take as few math and science classes as possible. Math was the most popular least favorite subject in this poll of American high schoolers, although it also was a pretty popular favorite subject as well, but still behind art, music, and science. But one thing is pretty consistent. Everyone does math. STEM subjects are extremely popular, and it's almost guaranteed you'll have a heavy focus on them in school. The most common subjects in school globally are math, English, chemistry, physics, and biology. There has been a huge push towards STEM in schools because of the rise of technology and engineering throughout the world, and that seems like they'll be good, stable future careers. And maybe that's true, although I have to say, now that I'm part of the corporate world and have been hearing about these super frequent mass layoffs, especially in the past few years, it seems like the tech sector has arguably been hit the worst for cutting jobs. Just because you graduate nowadays with a computer science degree does not mean you'll have an easy ride to getting hired. And maybe I'm just biased towards the humanities and the arts because I've always been that type of person from a young age. So it really hurts when I see that art and music and drama are always the programs being cut over and over again. And it's not that I think we need to cut math and science instead of cutting fine arts. I don't want schools to have to cut either. We need both. The benefits of students taking music and art are amazing. They've been shown to improve kids' academic performance in all other subjects, especially for low-income kids. And not just that, but it can improve their self-esteem and attention spans and social skills and reduce delinquent behavior. And that improving behavior part is really important because God knows we need to talk about kids' behavior at school. Talking to teachers and reading online forums like the teachers subreddit, I am so surprised with how kids are acting nowadays at school. Like, I'm not that old, and I just do not remember things being this bad when I was in school. Like, at a bare minimum, they're not even showing up like they used to. About one in six kids are chronically absent in any given school year, and for high school, that's up to one in five. And obviously, that's not a good sign. But even when they are in school, look at the percentage of high school kids who say that they listen and do their tasks and participate. Basically, all these elements of active learning, which I think are not very good numbers. And they're even worse, especially when you factor in that a lot of students who took this survey probably pretended to be better students than they actually are. And according to 70% of teachers, students are misbehaving more now than past years. And not just more, but a lot more. That number has been spiking since the pandemic. And I'm not trying to like fearmonger, but it really is beyond kids like not listening and not doing their homework. It's kids being more violent at school, fighting, hate crimes, threatening to hurt teachers. If I had to guess why I think students are behaving badly, it would be a combination of two things. Number one, young people today are struggling mentally. I have talked about this at length. They're having a hard time coping, which the pandemic amplified, so they act out or they check out. And two, they're less afraid of the consequences. There's definitely been a shift away from harsh punishment in like the 2010s, and I think a lot of that has come in response to research that showed students of color were disproportionately affected, like a black student was more likely to receive a harsher punishment than a white student for the same crime, essentially, and they were more likely to be punished, even though students of color were not more likely to misbehave, which just goes to show that the system goes all the way down to the elementary level. So instead of traditional punishments, schools have moved towards restorative justice, which is more of a socio-emotional approach that emphasizes counseling and restoring the student's relationship with school rather than breaking it further. It's kind of like finding someone who uses illegal drugs, like one option is to throw them in jail, and the restorative justice option would be to rehabilitate them. And there is some data to show that restorative justice works and is the better option, and yet these practices are on the rise, and misbehavior is also on the rise. So is it working? Maybe the problem is that this discipline is only being halfway enforced. Unfortunately, the rehabilitative method requires more resources than the old ways. Finding teachers who have been trained to use this kind of punishment, or training existing teachers, having counselors and qualified mental health professionals on staff to see the punishment through. I just don't know if our current school systems are well equipped enough to be able to handle this type of punishment that is more nuanced and complicated, even if it does work. Speaking of qualified staff, it's finally time to talk about teachers, those who want to make a difference in children's lives and improve future generations. Around half of public schools are understaffed, and those who recently had to fill a position reported it to be very difficult to find qualified candidates in almost every single subject. So the problem is twofold. Not enough people are applying, and the people who are applying don't meet all the qualifications. But you have to hire someone, so someone who doesn't check all the boxes might just have to be good enough for now, and you hope that you'll find a better option down the road, but that may never come. Teachers are not joining the field, they're leaving it in crazy high numbers. They are burned out unlike any other profession. Turnover, especially at urban schools, is so high, and after all I've talked about so far in this video, I'm not surprised. They hardly get to teach like they want to. Their job is classroom management. They're beholden to test scores, and they have to witness children struggle to learn rather than thrive. And that would be especially painful for someone like a teacher. Believing that your job has purpose and wanting to make an impact, and then realizing that there's so much bureaucracy, and the people at the top who are making the decisions have no idea what the day-to-day is like, is why so many people leave their jobs, not just teachers. And we also have to talk about compensation. I think the idea that being a teacher means that you will not make good money has spread far and wide. And even though pay is rising, it's going to be really hard to shake all these future negative assumptions after paying shit for so long. The number one reason why teachers leave is money. And now that people, the public knows this, they're less likely to go into teaching. Teachers are overworked. They're expected to dip into their own pockets to pay for supplies. They're expected to be therapists. They're not respected. And now this is all common knowledge. Even if you like the idea of being a teacher, or you are a teacher and you like your job, you have to prioritize your own financial stability and mental well-being. In my opinion, the saddest part of all this is that you're doing one of society's most important jobs. And in recent years, parents and a lot of the general public are going against teachers instead of supporting them. They don't listen to them, they don't respect them, and they don't trust them. Listen, I've clearly got my problems with the school system, but I'll almost always defend it as the better option against the alternative, homeschooling. The percentage of kids being homeschooled has skyrocketed since the pandemic, but even before then, it was on the rise. There is a really strong stereotype that homeschooling is mostly for conservative, strictly religious families. And could that be because it's the truth? One of the problems with homeschooling, and the problems I ran into with making this video, is not enough research. Parents who homeschool are held to very loose standards. Depending on where you live, it can be hardly regulated at all. No one is checking in to make sure that these kids are being well educated or even well cared for. Homeschooling families are not required and probably not inclined to tell an outside survey that one of the main reasons they chose to homeschool was because of religious reasons, or lately that they're afraid the woke left teachers are going to make their child trans. And honestly, I'm suspicious of these articles and studies that are put out by homeschooling organizations saying how much better homeschooled kids perform academically and how they're actually really diverse in lots of ways. I did look at this one that has a concern with the school environment as the top reason why they chose homeschooling, with a desire to provide moral instruction as the second place reason, and then after that, an emphasis on family life. And, those don't exactly scream secular to me, but fine. I'll admit, as how John Oliver put it, the ceiling for how great homeschooling can be is very high, and the floor of how bad it can be is non-existent. Like, for example, a neglectful teacher is bad, but a neglectful parent who is also a teacher homeschooling their child is worse. And when it comes to religious teachings, even if you don't set out to homeschool that way, the homeschool curriculum market is largely dominated by Christian organizations, so you would have to specify non-religious teaching material. And for the parents who really truly do set out to give their kids the best possible quality that they can of education, are they really more qualified than teachers? This whole area just needs so much more research done. Most of the homeschool studies now are small sample sizes and sponsored by homeschool institutions. But with homeschool now on the rise, it's time to look at it more closely to evaluate the potential positive effects and the dangers. So, schools today are in a pretty rocky place. And usually, when I get to the end of these videos, I like to give some suggestions of what I think would improve things. And for this video, I thought it would be only right that I get ideas from teachers, either ones that I know or from their posts online. So, number one, vote. I think everyone, including myself, often forgets that these people in powerful positions over schools are elected officials. We have a say. Teachers are not usually decision makers when it comes to what school looks like from a high level. That's the school board. Number two, we need more teachers and parateachers and other staff like counselors. Right now, teachers are overworked, so if we can hire more and spread the workload among more people, that will help alleviate everyone's stress. Also, to attract more teachers, compensation needs to increase. And not only that, but I'd like to recommend some sort of PR campaign towards young adults that explains how important and how great it can be to be a teacher, and then actually deliver on that experience. And number three, stop treating school like an old-timey transaction where the teachers are the lowly service workers and the parents and students are the customers who are always right. This should not feel like a business exchange where one side has all the control. This is about bringing up an educated populace. That is all I have for today. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like. And thanks for watching.